You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. 50 years ago, California voters approved the creation of a watchdog agency to hold candidates and politicians accountable for ethics and finance violations. But in the following decade, this watchdog has faced a significant backlog, and as a result, some of their investigations have dragged on for years. In some cases, violations or exonerations have been uncovered after the candidate won their election or even completed their term and left office. Yue Stella Yu is a politics reporter from the nonprofit newsroom Cal Matters, which partners with public media stations across the state. She joins us now to talk about her investigation into California's campaign watchdog, the Fair Political Practices Commission, and what could be done to fix its problems. Stella, it's great to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you.
Your investigation starts off with an anecdote about Isaac Galvin, a former member of the Compton City Council. Please tell us the story of Councilmember Galvin.
Yeah, for sure. So he kind of emerged in 2013. You know, he won his election as the hope of, you know, diverse representation on the city council. He made history as the first Latino city councilman in Compton. Nobody had ever done that before. But, you know, fast forward, you know, not 9 years after that, he vacated office in 2022. And by that point, he was mired in a lot of scandals. You know, he was, a year after that, he was actually indicted for alleged participation in a bribery scheme in another city. And he had won re-election in 2021, but the election results were tossed out by a judge because at that time, you know, a judge decided that he had committed voter fraud. And so what was kind of unknown during this nine-year tenure was the fact, according to the FPPC, the state agency, that Isaac Galvin had, you know, used some of his campaign cash, right, the money that he raised from his donors for personal purposes. So according to the investigation published by the state agency, he had paid for, you know, high-end eateries, meals at high-end eateries. He had paid for nightclub trips. And, you know, we cross-checked his bank records included in the investigation with his social media post, and identified one case where he actually posted about a personal outing with his friends in Beverly Hills that he paid for with campaign cash.
So he was already in trouble publicly for other stuff, but this using his campaign dollars as his personal piggy bank, that didn't come out until when?
That wasn't publicized until the commission, included his violations in an August 2022 meeting agenda. And that came out in July 2022 when the LA Times first reported on details of his violations.
And then what was Galvin doing at that point? Was he on the council still?
No. Isaac Galvin had already left office. He left office in May 2022, 2 months before that was publicized.
So tell our listeners about the role of the Fair Political Practices Commission. And then I'd love to hear the story behind the story. How were you first alerted to these problems with the FPPC?
Yeah, for sure. So that's a really good question. So a little bit about the FPPC. I mean, it is, you know, otherwise a lesser known agency, I would say, because it deals with, it has this very important role, right, of policing campaign ethics violations for local officials as well as statewide officials. It was created in 1974 following the Watergate scandal, and voters approved a ballot measure at the time to create this agency, as well as the Political Reform Act, which kind of governs campaign finance laws. And so that was how, you know, that was the purpose of this agency. And so it's been around for 50 years, right, and just celebrated its 50-year anniversary. And so essentially, you know, our story mainly focuses on its enforcement division. So it has a number of staff whose job is to identify which complaints and referrals from other agencies are worth pursuing for potential violations to investigate. And they will take some time to investigate a case and determine whether a campaign or an official, right, and they could be on your ballot, whether they have violated certain aspects of the Political Reform Act. And so how we found the story was we noticed that in its 50-year history, it was only audited once in 1998. And so that was interesting to me because I thought, oh, you know, how come that a state agency like this has not been audited for its performances? And so, you know, me and our data reporter, Jeremiah, both of us started to just ask this question. We wonder how long this commission takes to resolve some cases. And that was also because a lot of the people that we talked to just offline started sharing these anecdotes of their frustration about how long their complaints could take to be resolved. And so that is what kind of led us to do this story.
And what kind of discrepancies did you uncover with the investigation?
You mean findings?
Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially what we found was, so first of all, we wanted to analyze the database, you know, that the agency publishes on its website. So apparently, you know, like I said, we started with this question, right, how long the commission takes to resolve this case, these cases. And so in a piece that we published today, we actually talk about more in detail how we got through the data analysis. But essentially, we noticed that there were some, you know, flaws, especially with the data that the commission publishes prior to 2016 when they adopted a new record keeping system. And so sometimes you will see some cases on their website appeared as if they took 20 years to resolve, but they were just old cases that were later imported into the system and, you know, some fields were missing, things like that. So eventually what we did was we just used, you know, what the commission reported in its monthly executive staff reports. And so our finding in general is that it took about an average of a little over 300 days to resolve each case. But that was also because the, you know, some of the cases took more than 2 years to resolve, with the longest lasting almost 7 years. So that skewed the data a little bit. But more than that, you know, our story kind of walks people through what could happen when those cases take years to resolve. And we did find some cases, as is the case with Isaac Galvin, where a case could take, you know, years to resolve. And by the time it happens, this person could have already won re-election twice, right? Once or twice, or this person could be already, you know, out of office by the time that happens.
And how often does that happen, these egregious cases?
Well, that is actually a good question. We wanted to measure that, but it's really hard to measure. If you think about it, you know, we do know that overall 15% of the cases between 2017 and 2023 took more than 2 years to resolve. But it is hard to measure because it's, you know, you would have to go in on a case-by-case basis and look at the respondent and see when they left office or how many elections that they have gone through. And we're talking about, you know, thousands and thousands of cases. So that is something that I would love to explore, but we just did not really have that time or resource to go into that.
But you found more than just Councilmember Galvin.
That's correct. Yeah.
And how common is it for candidates or elected officials to be investigated by the FPPC?
Yeah. So, you know, candidates come and go, right? Officials come and go. You know, we have some measurements that's included in our story. So, for example, if you look at the statewide constitutional officers and you look at the eight most prominent ones, and we're talking about the governor, we're talking about the treasurer, right? So 7 of 8 of those have had past violations. I mean, so that's a really high percentage. And
including the governor, you're saying?
Including the governor, yeah. Okay. And the governor and the insurance commissioner, those two are the only 2 out of 8, right, again, who are under an ongoing investigation. And so I would like to point out, an ongoing investigation doesn't necessarily mean that this person is, you know, guilty. And there could be a lot of different violations, right? Being late to file selling a campaign finance report is clearly different from using your campaign cash to pay for personal outings, for example. But essentially, you know, Governor Gavin Newsom is under an investigation and has been for about 3 years for, you know, in 17 different cases, being late in filing some campaign paperwork for some of the behested payments, which essentially are payments that, you know, somebody made to another entity at the request of this official. And so that's Gavin Newsom's ongoing investigation.
Is that one common? Is that, do you see that a lot with elected officials?
Well, yeah. So behested payment wasn't originally something that was covered by the 1974 Political Reform Act. But if you look at the, you know, seven out of the eight constitutional officers who have had past violations, you can see a lot of them had violations of, you know, late behested payment reports. So I would say, like, at least among them, that seemed to be common. And it's also something that, you know, again, like, is kind of different, right, from the more egregious stuff, considering that this is like late filing of paperwork. But essentially, I would also point out, I mean, sometimes with late campaign filing reports, people could say, well, you know, it's just a clerical error, right?
What did the governor say?
Well, the governor's office said it was because the vendors who, you know, were either making those payments or who received those payments did not let his office know in time, which is why they missed the deadline. Although the you know, the burden of proof is actually on the filer, not necessarily the people who were giving that, making that payment, if that makes sense.
Could that be seen as a reasonable response given how common this is, or do you feel like more digging is necessary?
I don't think I personally can be the judge of what is reasonable or what not, considering that, you know, we asked for a response and this is what the governor's office gave us. But I do think, to the governor's office credit, I will say, you know, the records that we requested from the FPPC, which are something that we also requested from their office, but the governor's office refused to share. Just from the records, we could see that the governor's office did make some attempts, right, in some of these late filings to say, hey, you know, could you fill out this form? Could you help us, give us more information so we could get this to the FPPC so that we could file this. So you do see, you know, an attempt to try to comply with the law there.
Got you. Yeah. And you also looked at Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lora. What's mm-hmm. going on with his investigation?
Yeah, sure. So that originated from a 2022 complaint. And essentially, you know, it was filed by Consumer Watchdog, which is a group that kind of keeps an eye really primarily on the insurance industry in California. And so essentially the 2022 complaint alleged that, you know, some insurance companies had been making contributions to this legislative fund that is tied with Ricardo Lara from his olden days, and he's still a member of. And the claim was essentially that these companies had been making donations to this legislative fund, and then the legislative fund, after a while, would give this much money to another political committee that was set up to benefit Ricardo Lara and help with his reelection. And so that was the claim. And, you know, the FPPC launched an investigation into the case in 2022, but the case is still open. And as we know, the insurance commissioner was elected successfully, right, in 2022.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with CalMatters reporter Yua Stella Yu about her recent look into California's campaign watchdog, which has seen a significant delay in resolving its investigations. So, Stella, what kind of penalties can be issued following a finding of improper activity?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, over the years, the law has gotten more complex, and so there could be different types of violations. And so to that extent, the commission has set up different tiers of penalties for different tiers of violations. And so generally, you know, for the really egregious cases like we see, you know, with Isaac Galvin, you know, for each count of those violations, Under the law, you could be subject to, you know, a penalty of up to $5,000 per count. But the commission, you know, to speed up its enforcement, you know, over the past few years, they also established this program called a streamline program. And what that means is, you know, for lower harm offenses, let's say you were just late filing something, but you did file and you intended to cooperate. In those cases, you know, essentially they would, you know, streamline the entire process and it would result in a lower penalty. But it's hard to say, you know, how much the penalties would be because they essentially evaluate each case and give out penalties. You know, they can vary, you know, from like, you know, $100, for example, or, you know, like up to $5,000, like we just talked about.
So I want to get into the thrust of your investigation. Mm-hmm. Why are these investigations by the FPPC taking so long?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, so we essentially, you know, asked the commission, and we also, you know, looked for answers from, you know, ethics advocates, for example, right, or lawmakers over the past few years. There have been some people who have argued that, hey, this agency was created 50 years ago with a very minimal budget that would just satisfy their base needs. And they're arguing that, you know, the budget was never enough. And over the years, we did see, let's say, you know, over the past decade, we did see the agency's budget climb steadily year after year. But keep in mind, some of that money is also, you know, because the law was expanded by lawmakers. And, you know, the FPPC's duty was also expanded. And so a lot of that money was tied to specific duties that was later added onto their plate. And so essentially, you know, there are schools of thought that argue that the FPPC has been chronically underfunded and with that, you know, understaffed. I mean, it is interesting to me, I mean, having covered state politics in other states, kind of like Michigan and Tennessee, for example, that for a state as vast as California, you have 40 million people, and the size of the FPPC is merely 110 employees. But somehow, you know, they have to police local as well as state officials. And so that has been an argument that, you know, the commission staff have been arguing. And also, you know, in a 2022 staff memo, I think some of the staff mentioned that, you know, the structure of the agency, you know, sometimes introduced a lot of red tape and things could have, you know, been resolved faster, but somehow took a long time. And so, yeah, there are various reasons, you know, that people have brought up to me as to why this problem existed.
Is anyone raising concern with the fact that the legislature allocates funding for this agency and the agency is the one holding the legislature accountable? So it's kind of one of these who's guarding the hen house mm-hmm. scenarios?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. In fact, I was talking to, you know, Steve Glazer, who's this state lawmaker. You know, he's a Democrat and he has introduced a lot of campaign finance reform measures. And, you know, I asked him, I was like, hey, you know, do you think this agency is underfunded? And do you think that there's any incentive for lawmakers to allocate more funding to this agency that polices them? And he said, no. And I was like, why not? And he said, well, because they've decided that it's not in their best interest to do so. And so certainly, you know, I've talked to sources like I think, you know, you see California Common Cause, which is this other watchdog group that kind of also raises the same concern, which is, you know, there is a look. There is an optic, right, that the people who this agency is supposed to police, to provide oversight over, somehow has this control over their budget. And so it's definitely something that is a very interesting dynamic to observe.
Let's get into the problems. You touched on this a bit with the case of Isaac Galvin, but what are the various issues that result from investigations concluding years after they start? And ultimately, what does it mean to us, the voters and the residents?
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, like we did the story, you know, for months we were, you know, we're working on this story with this question in mind, right? Like, ultimately, why should voters care? Well, you should care because, you know, like as in the case with Isaac Galvin, he's an example that we're using to to show just what could happen when investigations and, you know, his investigation took 6 years to resolve. I mean, during that time, voters were kept in the dark because an investigation was ongoing. You can't really say that this person was, you know, definitively, you know, guilty or, you know, not guilty. I mean, it's really, you know, it's an ongoing investigation. But during that time, you know, voters cast their ballot without knowing even the existence of this investigation, right? And so sometimes, you know, that means that justice could be delayed years after this person actually, you know, committed or like violated the law. If this person is, you know, does end up being, you know, called out by the agency. And so essentially, you know, I talk to ethics advocates who say that some candidates who have bad intentions could just chalk it up as the cost of winning an election. They could just say, well, you know, I'm ultimately going to get a fine. So, you know, I can ignore this for now, knowing that the consequence is not going to hit me until years after. And so they could just, you know, this could allow the advocates argued that this could allow some people to just game the system, knowing that they will not have that aftermath, you know, immediately afterward. But also for innocent candidates, you know, sometimes, you know, some people do, quote unquote, weaponize the system and file a complaint immediately before an election. So for those who have an open investigation into them for years and years, and they conclude eventually that there was no violation found, I mean, that could be, you know, a sword hanging over someone's head, and that could damage their reputation. So those are some of the, you know, I guess those are some of the reasons I think why voters should care about this issue.
Well, Stella, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yua Stella Yu is a politics reporter for the nonprofit newsroom Cal Matters. We've been talking about an analysis of California's campaign watchdog, which is facing a major case backlog, and why its investigations often take years to complete. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to three ghost guides who are here to share the spookiest haunts of Sacramento. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're back in just a moment.